It's All Songs Considered. I'm Robin Hilton, and this is the music of Ty Siegel. If you don't know Ty Siegel, he's a guitarist, a drummer, and songwriter. For the past several years, he's been a leading figure in a garage rock revival that started in San Francisco. Ty Siegel goes through these relentlessly productive periods. He's put out literally dozens of albums and EPs, both as a solo artist and with his numerous other projects in bands like Fuzz, White Fence, and Sick Alps. He's toured and recorded nonstop, often releasing more than one album in a single year, which is surprising because a lot of musicians get to this point in their career and they've either run out of gas creatively or they have nothing left to prove. But Ty Siegel is just 27 years old and seems to only get better, more mature, and more creative with each project. Ty Siegel's latest album is called Manipulator, and it is a monster of a record. For this edition of All Songs Considered, he joined us from NPR's studios in Los Angeles to talk about the new record and to share songs by some of his favorite bands. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, no worries, man.
What do you want to kick us off with? One of the first questions we often ask people for these guest DJ sessions is if they remember the first record they ever bought with their own money.
The first record I ever bought was Cream, Disraeli Gears, when I was 12. It was vinyl, and the thing, so that there was a different CD I bought with my own money. That was the first CD I bought, was Led Zeppelin 1. But then I went back the next day and I bought 2, 3, and 4.
That's awesome. What was it about the Cream record that got your attention? You thought, I got to go get this.
I heard White Room. Growing up as like a little kid, you know, it was like the dying embers of grunge and like bad grunge.
Yeah.
It's like the mid-90s. And there's some cool stuff, but then, you know, when you start getting a little older and you can like turn the radio dial yourself and get more of a control on what you digest, you know, all
right.
Of a sudden I'm listening to a classic rock station and White Room comes on and I was like, this is so cool.
Was it that moment when it sort of opened your eyes and you realized music can be more than what you'd been hearing at that point?
Totally. Yeah, I realized that there was a whole other world out there that I had no idea existed, and like that's all I wanted to do. I think maybe the single most influential moment about like getting a record, I'd say, like, you know, I bought that Cream record, I bought the Led Zeppelin or whatever, but the most important thing for me is like my development as a youth, like a young person. My neighbor was moving away, you know, and she was talking to me, and I told her I bought the Led Zeppelin CDs, and I was like getting into Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath, right. You know, and then I bought a Black Sabbath CD, and she was like, come back tomorrow, I got something for you. And she put a big stack of records in my hand the next day and was like, here, just go buy a record player, and here's, if you like that stuff, you'll like this. And it was Alice Cooper, Love It to Death. It was Wheels on Fire, Cream record. It was Black Sabbath, Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, and Masters of Reality. It was Big Brother and the Holding Company. Just some heavy music. And for like me to hear Alice Cooper at like that age was like such a big deal.
Is there an Alice Cooper song or that stands out that you'd...
I'm like an obsessive Alice Cooper fan.
Really?
Yeah, definitely. I just think about albums, you know, like his first like five albums are awesome. Every song. It's cool because he was a total freak. It's crazy to think like Love It to Death with 18 and still got a long way to go and stuff was him trying to be as safe and commercial as possible. And that record is still like a record for the freaks.
Let's listen to I'm 18. Was there a good chance you were listening to Alice Cooper while working on your new record, Manipulator?
Oh, yeah. Constantly listening to Alice Cooper. I mean, I DJ sometimes around town, and, you know, one thing I've been known to do is have, like, a 30-minute Alice Cooper chunk in there.
And how's it received?
Oh, man, it's total party music. Yeah. You know, people always love Alice.
So you were 12, you think, when you discovered him, you're thinking?
Yeah, 12. It's cool because, you know, listening to it now and thinking about, like, you know, thinking about it analytically or whatever, it's, like, so suburban feeling, you know? It's like kids in suburbia that, like, want to get away from their parents and... It's like, it's such a funny song and great because of it, because it's so simple. It's like, of course, a kid that's 18 is going to be like, oh, yeah, I hate it. I hate it here. This song rules.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's funny. You know, I came to him when I was probably in elementary school, and it was because he was on The Muppet Show.
That's so cool.
And I thought, who is this crazy guy? Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah. Alice Cooper. Let's talk a little bit about the new record, and we'll get to some of the other music that you brought to play with us today, too. So your last one, Sleeper, your last record, Sleeper, was a lot quieter. It was a more acoustic record. And listening to Manipulator, it feels like you've sort of come back with a vengeance. The guitars on this record are just brutal. and the guitar solos, too. It really feels like you really stretched out on this record.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that was kind of the idea. It was like each record I like to think of as an exercise in a mindset or a position on pop music or rock music or whatever music you're trying to do. That's kind of how I like to categorize like working in that mind frame. So this one was like, okay, time to go as far out and loud, or that was like the idea, was to go as far down as possible. And like with Sleeper, for instance, it was like the rabbit hole wasn't, you know, sonically, it was something else. So it's like the idea for this was like, sonically, we need to go as far as possible with these songs and stretch them out. And it's crazy because we got to work in a studio for a whole month. Like every day I lived at a studio in Sacramento with the engineer. And it was just him and I every day, every month, every day for a month, trying to go past what we've normally done. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I can feel it on this record. It was one of the first things I thought as I was going through it. In fact, the song I want to play right now is called Feel. And and we'll come back and talk about what's going on in it.
Cool.
Oh, it kills me to bring this down. I won't lie to you, Ty. I like rock and roll.
Cool.
And you do it pretty well.
Oh, well, thanks, man.
Yeah. Oh, this song is just, you know, it's just, the word I keep coming back to is urgent. There's so much urgency in this record.
Yeah, we definitely, you know, I've done a lot of the records that have been like, no plan, just show up and do it. Melted was kind of like that. Slaughterhouse was like that. We just had 4 days live, just like, do it, done.
Right.
But this was it was like a lot more like, okay, let's, what can we focus on, you know, like, you know, and there was no messing around or...
Yeah, well, this percussion break here, who is this doing that for you?
That's me.
Oh, that's you on percussion there. Wow.
Yeah, and Chris Woodhouse on the cowbell.
Let's just hear this again. Drops mic, walks off stage. Tell us a little bit about how this record came together. It sounds like you didn't do it in your garage.
Yeah, you know, the whole idea behind this record was, okay, most records I've done were just immediate, kind of flash in the pan records where it's like, got a song, record it, like, don't think too hard that it has the feeling to it, and that's all that matters, like...
Right.
The vocal take's not perfect, but who cares, because that's the feel, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was me, like, I'm going to write songs for a year, and I'm not going to release them, and then I'm going to record them. That was the idea, which is weird for me. It was because I get impatient, and I want to move on to the next project or something, but it was kind of a test.
Yeah,
for me to focus.
And what's it like to hear these songs now, pushing yourself in that direction?
It's great. It makes me feel like it's worth doing. And I was skeptical of it because I am of the opinion that if you focus too hard on art or something that is based just as much in emotion and like feeling, it loses its power. For me, I needed somebody else there every day with me, which is Chris Woodhouse, and someone who can record the way he can. And also, we had an agreement going into it that he was going to be a very harsh judger of performances. You know, he didn't let anything slide. Like, all the things I would have been like, that's fine, just keep it, let's move on. Oh my God. You know, he's like, nope.
Do it again.
Nope, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to do vocals for 12 hours today on this song until you get it right. And it's, you know, it was pretty old school and kind of awesome to try, you know.
You've got a handful of other songs that you brought to share with us. What else would you like to play?
Well, speaking of Chris, let's play She Shook Me Cold, because Chris is a walking encyclopedia of music. He turned me on to Amandul 2. He's turned me on to, you know, like the Subway Sect and like lots of cool, weird punk and far out music. But this was the most surprising one to me, that I had never heard The Man Who Sold the World. And, you know, I'd like to think of myself as a humongous Bowie fan. And he was like, are you kidding me? You haven't heard The Man Who Sold the World. And he played me this song, She Shook Me Cold. And I immediately was like, oh my God. I think this is my favorite Bowie song.
Wow.
Just because it doesn't even sound like Bowie. Yeah. It sounds like Black Sabbath or something. Like, sounds like heavy proto metal, but it's Bowie's take on it, and it's pretty amazing, and it definitely informed what we were doing in the studio.
Let's listen to Bowie's She Shook Me Cold.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the percussion on that in particular sounds like it could be off Sabbath's Paranoid or something like that.
That whole record is heavy, and, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
So cool.
So you do have some quieter moments, a few quieter moments on Manipulator on the new record, and one of them is a cut called Don't You Want to Know.
Oh, Susie, Susie Thumb, your life's just begun. Don't you wonder so?
So you make a couple references on this record to someone named Susie Thumb. Who is she?
She's a character. She's a character that exists in the world of the record. Specifically, like there's kind of a bunch of vignettes kind of on the record, or I guess rather instead of like vignettes, it's more perspectives. Like I had kind of the idea of like instead of telling a story. From like a narration point of view, instead of going, I went to the store and I bought an apple and it tasted great. It would go, I went to the store and I bought an apple. Cut. I work at a store. I had a horrible day today and I sold this weird guy an apple. Cut. I work at the garbage disposal place and there was an apple there and I only had one bite out of it. Cut. So this person from another song, The Crawler, is a rock star. So the idea for me was Susie saw the crawler on TV, decided to move to try to follow the crawler and be with him, more of like a groupie. And this song is from the perspective of her parents wondering what will happen to her. And then the next song on the record, Sue Thumb, is about kind of what happens to her, her like desires and more from her perspective. And then the crawler is about them meeting and getting together. Actually, so she actually makes it.
Let's listen to The Crawler. That was another one that I wanted to play at the top of it because I love the guitar noise on it so much, and maybe we can geek out a little bit about gear when we come out of it.
Cool.
We'll be right back.
What in the world are you running that guitar through? I hear plenty of fuzz on records. That the fuzz on this one is just so gloriously fat.
I'm going to give credit to Chris Woodhouse on that one because he has a secret trick. So there's like, you can blow out a guitar through like a preamp into a tape machine, and that's a very distinct sound, I think. And depending on which one, they're different. And you can put on like a limiter, and that's a different sound too, and stuff like that. So basically, what this is Chris, I guess like a year or two ago, like stumbled upon, he plugged in the wrong compressor for the guitar mic, and it was just the nastiest thing he'd ever heard. And so he now it's a secret trick. He won't even tell me what it is. He'd have to kill me. But it's his secret compressor, and all I know about it is that he was using it very incorrectly, and that's what made that sound. So this is a combination of that using that thing, my fuzz war, and my amp that's heard on the rest of the record. And another mistake, a lot of the guitars are the talkback mic plugged in also incorrectly. So the direct mic in front of the amp, there was a mistake made, and instead of that being recorded, the talkback mic was recorded.
Is the mic to talk back to the studio?
Yeah, just the like, yeah. Hey man, how was that take or whatever?
Right. Mic. It's a little cheapy microphone compared to...
Yeah, and it's pointing at the wall, like it's just not supposed to be picking up any guitar, and because he was using that insane-o compressor thing, it came out totally weird.
It's cool that you guys were in a place with this record, working on it, where you had room for great accidents like that, happy accidents.
Totally. I mean, that, and again, like that was, having time is so cool. Mm. The longest I'd ever spent in the studio before was 6 days. It's crazy to me.
I always assumed I'd be a rock star if someone would just give me all the time in the world to work on it. I need a few years, I think.
Yeah,
it's not going to happen overnight, Ty.
You can make a record in a couple years, man. You got it.
Bob works on one every February. Bob works on a record.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he puts one on every February. Let's look at some of the other songs that you brought to play. What's something that from your record collection that someone might be pretty surprised to hear? I think most people who listen to your music and enjoy it assume that you just listen to T-Rex all the time or other, late 60s, early 70s vintage rock. But what's something we might be surprised to hear in your library?
Oh, I just saw the Hardcore Devo show. Devo is like my favorite band. Has been since I was 13, and like, of course, like Black Sabbath and these other things exist, but like, just as much of a constant as Black Sabbath has been in my life, Devo has been there too, and like, especially what they stand for, like, the de-evolution of society, and it's so pretty hilarious to see it all continuously de-evolving in front of our eyes, and Devo was right all along.
tell us about the song you brought, I'm a Potato.
It's off the Hardcore collection. It's amazing. Their weird production and everything about them. They're like the perfect art rock band. I'm a Spud Boy because of them.
let's listen to a little bit of I'm a Potato.
What happens next?
The evolution.
Self-execution.
No solution. I'm a potato, and I'm so here. Steel doctors, tools, some pretty heads on dogs and mules.
systems, men in Paris, take bodies falling down the stairs. Father, son team split the cost of nighttime drills, but all is lost. To de-evolution, self-execution, no solution. I'm a spud man. I got eyes all around.
I love that. This band always... always puts a smile on my face.
They can't help it.
Yeah, it's the perfect marriage of humor and just jump up and down dance rock. You just want to move when you hear it and just have a good time.
Yeah, it's great, and it's also great to feel like you're in on it with them. You know,
yeah,
to get it, because you know they had hits. You know, Whip It, and
they redid the Working in a Coal Mine, and
yeah, Working in a Coal Mine and stuff, mm-hmm. and. It's pretty amazing to think about, you know, cookie cutter family, like mom and dad with their, you know, like it's totally a scene from one of their music videos, like a 9-year-old kid with his dog. They're having a good time listening to Devo. And that's hilarious because they're listening to Whip It.
Yeah, it's subversive, but with a wink.
Yeah, there's always a wink, and it's great.
Yeah. Ty, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us about the record. I hope that this new, longer approach to working on records and taking more time it won't deny us another record next year. You're doing about one a year, and we're really kind of depending on it now.
Thanks, man. I have a pretty wild idea for the next one, so it might take me actually a little longer.
But, wow.
It should be interesting.
Do you have a cut when you go back and listen to these songs that you're happiest with or most proud of that we can go out on?
I'm just more into like the weirder ones on the record. Like Mr. Main is such a weird one that I maybe play that one because it's kind of like pretty bizarre, and I think that's why I like it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care.
You too.
That's Ty Segall. His new record's called Manipulator, and you can hear the whole thing in our First Listen series until it's released on August 26th. Go to npr.org/firstlisten. It's All Songs Considered. I'm Robin Hilton.